Crime and Crime Again discusses true crime stories that may contain disturbing content. Listener discretion is advised. Today's story takes us all the way back to 1987, to the tiny town of Central City, Kentucky, which sits in Muhlenberg County, in the western portion of Kentucky. In 2010, the population was just under 6,000, and the town itself is only 5 square miles. And this was the home of 20-year-old single mom, Karina Mullen, who grew up on her family's farm just 10 miles outside of town. Karina Mullen was born September 1st, 1967, in Missouri. At some point, her family relocated to Kentucky, and that's where she spent her childhood. She grew up with her father, Claude, her mother, Patricia, and her sister, Heather. Her family and friends affectionately knew her as Rini. Karina wanted to build a stable life for herself and her 2-year-old daughter, so she moved into an apartment in the tiny town of Central City and started a job at the local police department, doing some clerical work and some daytime cleaning. She wanted a career in medicine, but she settled for the police department while she worked towards that goal. Karina was known to be a devoted mother. Everything she did for her daughter. She wanted to prove to her parents that she could take care of her daughter on her own, and she could build a good life for them. However, just 6 weeks after moving into the apartment, Karina, for one reason or another, decided that she wanted to move back to her parents' small farm. On October 2nd, 1987, Karina was ready to move back home. All of her belongings were either packed or already at her parents' house, and her daughter was already staying there as well. She told her family that she just had to go back to her apartment and get a few last items. So she left her daughter with her parents and went back into town. But she never came back. I do want to place a trigger warning here, because this case is rather brutal, and it may be disturbing for some people to listen to. That day, October 2nd, 1987, a city worker noticed a car outside of a parking garage in town, and he saw blood trailing from the trunk. He immediately called police. Lead homicide detective Billy Fields with the Central City Police Department is the first on the scene. Because Karina worked at the police department, everyone who arrived on scene were her coworkers, and they immediately recognized her nickname, Rini, on her license plate. Police opened the trunk of the car to find 20-year-old Karina Mullen, naked, in the fetal position, and wrapped in a blanket. She is no longer alive. Her face was so severely beaten that she would not have been easily recognizable if her coworkers didn't already recognize the license plate, and if they didn't already know that she hadn't come home to her parents the night before. She had bruises on her legs, presumably from being raped. She was slashed across her throat, and she had been stabbed several times. The medical examiner later confirms the rape and later rules her cause of death asphyxiation due to choking on her own blood. From the car, investigators collected several swabs of blood, and they found 3 hairs on Karina's back. There was also dirt and gravel found on her body. However, no further evidence was found in or around the car, so police move on to her apartment. It's at her apartment where they discover the crime scene. There are significant amounts of blood on the bed and the floor in Karina's bedroom, and investigators collect jeans and underwear from the scene. A total of 23 items from both the car and the apartment were collected as evidence. The first person that investigators question is Karina's roommate, 21-year-old Angela Smith. The two of them had only been roommates for a few weeks, but they'd bonded because they were both single mothers to small children. Karina's sister, Heather Mullen, says that Angela and Karina seemed like really good friends. She had no reason to believe there was any ill will between the two of them. When questioned, Angela claims that she was sleeping and heard nothing. She says that her heavy sleep was due to excessive drinking and taking painkillers the night before. The apartment is very small. Angela and Karina's bedrooms actually shared a wall, so immediately investigators find it strange that Angela claims that she didn't hear anything, because this murder was obviously very brutal and very violent. There's no way there wasn't screaming. There's no way there wasn't yelling. Angela goes on to explain to police that because Karina and herself were both kid-free the night before, they decided to go out and drink. She says they had come back around midnight and that Karina was also extremely intoxicated. Karina decided to go to bed and she asked Angela to leave the door unlocked because her boyfriend might be coming over that night. Also strange is that the neighbors who were interviewed also said they didn't hear or see anything, that nothing was amiss the night before. Karina's boyfriend is 19-year-old Jimmy Royce Springer, and they'd been seeing each other for about 6 months. Their relationship was not stable, however, it was tumultuous and toxic, and Jimmy had very controlling, obsessive tendencies. Once, when asked why her face was all red, Karina explained to her father that Jimmy had scrubbed off the makeup that she was wearing, saying that she didn't need it. So obviously that is a red flag right there. Her family did not like Jimmy. They knew that he was verbally abusive, potentially physically abusive. They knew that it wasn't the right relationship for her to be in, but she had already made the decision, shortly before her murder, to break things off. When interviewed, Jimmy admits to being in the apartment that night, but his testimony is shady. He says that he saw blood by her bedroom door, and then looked in her bedroom, saw the large amounts of blood, and then left. Which means he didn't call police, he didn't knock on the roommate's door and ask her any questions. Most people, if they were to walk into their loved one's bedroom to see significant amounts of blood and their loved one nowhere in sight, they would immediately call the police. Jimmy also claims that after he left the apartment, he drove around Central City trying to look for her, but when he couldn't find her, he simply returned home. There was no concern for the amount of blood in your girlfriend's bedroom whatsoever. Because of his suspicious explanation of the night before, Detective Fields sets his sights on Jimmy. He zeroes in on him as their prime suspect. Further in the investigation, Angela, again Karina's roommate, actually names an acquaintance of hers as a potential person of interest. This acquaintance is Jeffrey Boyd, who was a notorious drug dealer around town. He already had prior offenses, such as drug trafficking and rape. It's assumed that Karina only knew of or knew Jeffrey through Angela. There's no evidence that they knew each other personally or were friends themselves. A witness actually comes forward, saying that the day before her murder, he saw Karina arguing with Jeffrey and that Jeffrey threatened her with a gun. Detective Fields does interview this witness, but he concludes that there's not sufficient credibility to the witness's claim, so he does not pursue that line of investigation any further. It's learned that 2 days before her murder, Karina had spoken to another officer at the police department about drug trafficking in Central City that she had knowledge of, and she didn't know who to go to. Her statement to this police officer did name Jeffrey Boyd as a ringleader, but there was no evidence to suggest that Jeffrey knew Karina had come forward about him. Overall, there is very little, if any, investigation into Jeffrey Boyd. I don't know that Detective Fields thought he was a viable suspect. I don't know that he actually ever interviewed him or spoke with him about Karina. On November 30th, 1987, Karina's boyfriend, Jimmy Royce Springer, is arrested for her murder. He spends 7 months in jail, awaiting trial, and his trial begins in July of 1988. The trial, however, only lasts 2 days, and the jury deliberates for only a few hours. When the jury comes back with their verdict, Jimmy Roy Springer is acquitted of the murder of Karina Mullen. And of course, this means that he cannot be charged for her murder again due to double jeopardy. This absolutely felt like a dead end and a loss of hope for Karina's family. Jimmy was the most viable suspect in Karina's murder. He admitted to being in her apartment, he admitted to seeing the large amounts of blood in her bedroom, and he admits that he never called police. Her family really thought that Jimmy Springer would be put away for her murder and that Karina would see justice. I couldn't find an exact date, but at some point, the toxicology report does come back, and it actually shows no alcohol in Karina's system, which directly contradicts Angela's claim about Karina's activities the night before she was found dead. Furthermore, there are no witnesses who saw Karina at the bar that night. So Angela's entire claim about the night before Karina was found in her trunk comes into heavy question. Karina's car was kept at a city garage for some time after she was found. But at some point, they could no longer keep it, and they called her parents to come and retrieve it. Everything in the car had been left just as it was on the day they found Karina. Claude had decided to start his own investigation into his daughter's murder. And when they got her car back, that's where he started. The very first time he searches Karina's car, he opens the passenger door and finds a piece of evidence that he doesn't understand how it was overlooked in the first search. He finds a pocket knife. It's assumed that Claude found this odd because Karina didn't carry any pocket knives that he knew of. He sends it off to the crime lab, but they find no traces of blood or any other evidence on the knife. So he's hit yet another dead end. Claude goes out every day searching for answers about his daughter's death. He keeps in constant contact with Detective Billy Fields, and Fields even once takes Claude out on a ride-along with him so they can search for clues, talk to potential witnesses, and try to find out what happened. This, however, is where the case essentially goes cold. By 1992, all of the original investigators, including Detective Billy Fields, had all retired, with no answers in Karina's case. The same year, a new investigator takes over, and that's Detective Terry Arnett. Heather Mullen, Karina's sister, says, "Detective Terry Arnett was the most amazing man. He was very determined to help my family find the killer." The community in Central City, however, was not impressed with Detective Arnett's diligence. Arnett was incredibly determined to find answers. He re-examined evidence, he re-interviewed witnesses, he talked to absolutely everybody that he could. But the community just wanted to forget. They wanted to forget this horrific, violent chapter in their town's history. Terry Arnett worked on Karina's case for almost 3 years. But before he could hit the 3-year mark, he was diagnosed with cancer. As a result, he resigned from his position as lead investigator. During his investigation, he gathered quite a substantial case file. After he resigned, he turned his case file over to his trusted friend, Curtis McGee, who was a pastor at the time, but today is the sheriff of Muhlenberg County. Terry Arnett passes away from his cancer on December 4th, 2005. After he passes, Curtis looks through the files that Terry gave him, and he discovers troubling information. All 23 items of physical evidence that were collected from the car where Karina was found and the apartment where she lived had somehow disappeared. The Kentucky State Crime Lab in Madisonville had collected this evidence and stored it. However, years and years after the investigation started, it was now discovered that none of those items had ever actually been forensically tested. Less than a year after Terry Arnett's death, Kentucky State Police Detective Damon Fleming takes over the case as the lead investigator. He convinces Curtis McGee to turn over the case files that Terry had given to him, and he picks up where Terry Arnett left off. Detective Fleming discovers that Terry Arnett had followed the chain of custody for that evidence that disappeared, and he learned that Billy Fields, the original detective on Karina's case, had signed a request to have the evidence returned to Central City Police Department without being tested. Though the Kentucky State Crime Lab had collected and stored the evidence, Billy Fields, as the lead investigator, was responsible for requesting the testing necessary. He never requested any testing. After he signed the request to have the evidence returned to Central City Police Department, the evidence disappears. Detective Fleming learns that Fields likely destroyed all of it. Detective Fleming goes back and re-interviews witnesses, and he discovers that one of the neighbors that was originally interviewed after Karina was found actually had seen something. She had seen a police car outside of Karina's apartment the night of her murder. In 2006, just months after Detective Fleming took over the case, 19 years after Karina was murdered, a witness finally comes forward. It's unclear whether this witness came forward of her own volition or if she was somehow contacted by police as a potential witness and decided to come forward with her story at that point. This witness was 16 in 1987, and at the time she came forward, she was 35 with a teenager of her own. She says that October night in 1987, she was on her way home from a friend's house when a Central City Police car pulled up beside her. Jeffrey Boyd emerged from the car and put her inside of it. She's able to identify the driver of the police car as Detective Billy Fields. They drive to Karina's apartment, where Karina was sleeping when they entered. The witness recalls Fields saying that Karina had leaked some information about drug trafficking in the city and that she, quote-unquote, needed to be punished. She says that she was forced to watch as Billy Fields, Jeffrey Boyd, and Jimmy Kramer, an apprentice of Boyd, beat, tortured, and raped Karina. The witness also says that Angela, the roommate at the time, actually did hear what was going on, and she was crying and hysterical the whole time. The three men then turned on the witness and raped her, just as they'd done to Karina. The men then put Karina's body in the trunk of her own car, and Fields forced the witness to drive the car to a parking lot where Jeffrey Boyd was waiting. She says she jumped out of the car when they got to the parking lot, threw the keys, and ran away. She was able to make it safely to her grandparents' house, where she hid until daylight. She says that because Billy Fields was a police officer and Jeffrey Boyd was notoriously dangerous, she had been too afraid to come forward all that time. Another witness later says that he did actually see Billy Fields and Jeffrey Boyd clearly walking through Central City that night. This was presumably after they had left Karina's car in the parking lot with her body inside of it. Billy Fields never left Central City. He retired and lived a good life there. For 19 years, he got away with what he did. It was learned that he had long been involved in a massive drug trafficking operation in the town. Just 5 months after Detective Damon Fleming took over the case, Billy Fields is arrested on November 2, 2006. Jeffrey Boyd, Jimmy Kramer, and Angela Smith are also arrested. The trial began in April 2009, 3 years after their arrests, and 22 years after Karina Mullen's murder. Billy Fields was convicted of kidnapping, rape, and first-degree murder, and he was sentenced to life in prison. Jeffrey Boyd was convicted of kidnapping, rape, first-degree murder, and he was also sentenced to life in prison. Jimmy Kramer was convicted of kidnapping, rape, and manslaughter, and he was sentenced to 60 years. Kramer still maintains his innocence to this day. I couldn't find a definitive answer for Angela Smith's charges, but I believe that she was charged with obstruction of justice, and her sentence is unclear. Karina's mother, Patricia Mullen, died 5 weeks before these people were finally arrested for her daughter's murder. And her father, Claude Mullen, died in 2011. The same day that the news broke of the arrests, Karina's daughter, who was 2 years old at the time that her mother was killed, found out that she was having a baby girl. Billy Fields is in his late 70s now, and he is still incarcerated, of course. Jeffrey Boyd is now in his 50s, and he is also still incarcerated. I believe that Jimmy Kramer is also still incarcerated. From what I could find about Angela Smith, I believe she only got some sort of probation for obstruction of justice. I chose this case firstly because it was one I had never heard of before. It took place in Kentucky, where I'm from, and also because this case really stuck with me. I first learned of this case when I watched Unusual Suspects on Hulu. Karina's case is covered in an episode called Brute Force. I personally was absolutely stunned at the end of the episode when they revealed who had killed Karina. The entire episode, I was suspicious of the police work, and I was confused by what seemed to be a lack of investigation into certain people, and it was all clear by the end, but my jaw still dropped. I was still shocked. So this was, unfortunately, a not at all uncommon tale of police corruption, and it is a case that I feel that not many people have heard of. Comes from a small town. It's a very old case, but it's definitely satisfying that the people responsible were brought to justice, even though it was almost 2 decades later. And that is it for me today, guys. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Crime Again Pod, and you can also like the Facebook page, Crime and Crime Again Podcast. We also have a discussion group on Facebook, Crime and Crime Again Podcast Discussion. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode.